Welcome back to Cast Me to Hell with me, Seb.
And with me, Robbie.
And here is our follow-up from our Friday spoiler-free episode, and here we come at you with all the spoilers.
Yeah, we are getting our fangs into this film. excuse the shit pun. And we're going to be talking the blood and guts of the film. We both, I mean, in our spoiler-free film, we kind of skirted around a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and I think maybe it's probably because, like any film, I think it's best to go in blind. But a lot of this, you would give away if you spoke too much
definitely
about it. You know,
there is a lot that has been given away, and more than should have been given away, which was the main kind of sticking point for us, was that, you know, if people haven't seen any of this, then they should just avoid it. If you haven't been spoiled by trailers, then you should just have avoided it.
Yeah.
Because it would be a much better film. Definitely be interested to hear from someone who literally saw nothing and then went into this film.
Yeah.
To see whether they would have known. But sadly, the huge selling point of the film was basically Abigail and the idea that it was Dracula's daughter.
Yeah.
This is obviously a remake, technically, or rebooted version of a 1936 film called Dracula's Daughter, which is in the Monster Universe.
Okay.
So, and this also belongs somewhat in Universal's new Monster Universe.
Does it?
Yeah, kind of. So, The Invisible Man was kind of seen as the first. You know, they had the Dark Universe. Remember
yeah,
that shit show?
That. Yeah, I remember that.
Tom Cruise was going to make a Dark Universe. And
yeah.
He brought in Russell Crowe and he brought in.
Johnny Depp.
They did that whole photo shoot.
Javier Bardem
was Frankenstein's monster and Johnny Depp was that. Like, literally, probably the worst, like, literal setup ever. This is probably the biggest time it's crash and burn, like the worst ever. You have all these like amazing actors sat in this photo shoot. We're about to make this whole universe of movie monsters, and then literally one Tom Cruise film destroys the whole thing.
Yeah,
a perfectly mediocre. Which again, many times, all you needed was Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser
just re-brought back Rick O'Connell, and then the rest of those actors in that universe would have been
okay.
Fucking 20 films strong by now.
Yeah, I'd be beaten off to it. You know?
But what they've instead done now, this is like loose, like okay. As in like they're not really like connecting them. It's not like that. But it is kind of Universal somewhat still wanted part of that thing. But what they basically said is go back to the board, make lower budget films that basically are just like, you know, monster movies, reinventing our classic characters but kind of doing it in newer, getting directors with different visions instead of trying to be like, basically we're going to get someone to connect this whole universe together, and it has to be forced, and it has to be. So what they've done is like The Invisible Man. It's not, but the thing is, the question is become like, it's not really, because Renfield,
yeah.
And that, again, that was about Dracula, and yet that's not technically connected, but that was another one within Universal that they made that one, so people say that one is. As we were talking before, I talked about Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein's Cone. He's not, but I believe the Maggie Gyllenhaal Christian Bale one might be within that one, or maybe there's another Frankenstein in the way. I don't know. There's always a million Frankenstein.
Yes.
And they've got a whole list of different ones they're going to make. So I think Leo One is also doing the new Wolfman
with Ryan Gosling.
He's dropped out. He's replaced it with. I don't know who the actor is. It's gone from Ryan Gosling to unknown.
probably Barry Keane.
Again, that kind of, they're trying to like reinvent them in kind of different kind of ways, I think.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what kind of makes it even more confusing that at the end of this, they introduce a Dracula. So it's like, okay, so it's not a connected world then. They're just reinventing the characters. I think people have been waiting since Invisible Man to see if Universal were kind of one by one going to slowly do it without them being connected, but kind of say, these are the monsters, and then one day they were hoping we can come along and do, you know, that and have the rapey Invisible Man.
We can sneaky do it.
But instead, you know, they should just skip ahead and go straight to, you know, the whole multiverse concept and bring Kevin Bacon back in versus that rapist.
Yeah.
Another rapist, and just get all the rapists.
Just get all the rapists in one.
A film of watching nothing.
Yeah.
Literally invisible men. They're just the voices of Kevin Bacon and all the different actors, but you can't see them because they're all invisible men just fighting in one room.
It's just like wind in a room. You know?
Anyway, back to Abby. Girl. So that's how kind of what this was. But yeah, this is a loosely adapted reboot technically of Dracula's Daughter from 1936.
Okay.
So within that first kind of original Universal kind of monster movies, the classic kind of ones. But that one was not seen so much as like a classic one. This is kind of one. But that's what they did. They, I believe Universal have basically been offering out to actors saying, basically, we want to make, you know, the monster movies. We want to make those. Have you got a concept? Have you got an idea? And Radio Silence came in and they had the idea of redoing in this weird way, you know, this kind of version of Dracula and giving a different spin on it, which I think they do. They kind of bring their own style to it anyway.
Yeah, I think it worked really well. I do think that, like we said in our spoiler-free one, I wonder whether they originally had the intention of keeping the cards up their sleeve.
Yeah.
Barbarian was so effective because everybody was raving about it, but nobody was kind of willing to say what it was about.
Yeah.
And the trailers didn't really give anything away.
Which is a really effective marketing tool nowadays. Like, you know, it does seem to help Phil, you know, to have a big kind of hype around it.
And the film, this film, like we said, it almost feels as if for the first act, maybe the kind of teasing that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you get all of these characters who kidnap this, you know, this seemingly innocent little girl. They have to keep her for 24 hours whilst they get the ransom money. Giancarlo Esposito does his whole, you know, I'm the mastermind thing.
Yeah.
And says, I'll see you in the morning, or I'll see you in like 24 hours or whatever. And then it follows that kind of slow burn.
Yeah. I mean, and they start to get the ideas of, like, they want to know a bit more about who it is who's taking them on. And you start to get this kind of idea of this kind of mob boss, like this guy who kind of, they say, is a violent kind of, really violent, like uber violent kind of kid, like seems to have a mass of like people that die under his thing, and you're kind of getting that little one. Because you knew it was a vampire and you knew the concept, you're kind of like, oh, so, you know, this dude's Dracula. This is his little girl.
And then when they start, you know, when they, like, what's his name? The lad who died. I haven't got
Angus Cloud.
Angus Cloud. I was going to say Alan Sugar. My brain is thinking at the moment. When Angus Cloud dies, and I think his death was good. You know, we get a couple of like weird little teases up until then, but then Angus Cloud, you know, is dragged off screen.
Yeah.
And you see like his head fall, and they start talking about this Valdez character. And he's like, you know, they had three people who were gonna flip on this crime boss, and they were the top story of this building. There was only the front door and the window, and in the morning, you know, all the heads had been removed. And they start talking about this Valdez character, and, you know, the girl says that Dan Stevens said he was it. And for this part, you start to feel as if, like, if you'd gone in blind, maybe this film is like an inside man, and who's kind of, because everybody's
and you don't really know where it is in that way. Like, in that first half an hour odd, it really is kind of like this kind of more of a kind of like a heist gone wrong kind of film, or, you know, that kind of thing. Like, they really all start to kind of play against each other, and you've got those classic kind of, you know, the two people you think you can kind of trust, which is kind of Melissa Barrera's character. And then you've got the blanking on his name.
Rickles.
Rickles, that's the one. Yeah. Rickles, yeah. So you've got Melissa Barrera's Joey, and then you've got Rickles, and they like form this kind of little bot. You know, this little, like, the second he sees her, he's giving her those fucking eyes. You know,
it's all piping.
It's bamming. You
it's
know?
All pipe, man.
He sees her get in that van at the start, and you're just straight away like, he wants a bang.
He's like, pipe.
And to be honest, for the actor, until he was in the house and lit better, I thought he was a much older man than he was.
he looked like an 80-year-old man trying to fuck.
Did look way older than like Melissa Barrera. It looked like they'd cast like a 50-year-old bloke to be like,
I'm gonna get some.
You know, I mean,
like a 70-year-old man. Like,
you're sat there going, I feel like, and even Dan Stevens is older than Melissa Barrera, but I was thinking, I feel like Dan Stevens is the better fit if you're going to go with the dude that's going to try and pipe her. But I was like, and then once he actually got into the house, I was like, oh shit, you're actually young.
You're actually young and handsome.
I was like, dude, I couldn't say, like, literally, because he's kind of hidden with his beanie and stuff like that. It, literally, I don't know if you were, but I was there thinking, how old is this dude? Like, you're going to get some piping on, which is perfectly fine. If you want to, if she wants to pipe the 50-year-old black man, then it's fine.
Yeah, that's fine, you know?
But it is perfectly. But yeah, I was kind of there. But you've got this kind of, yeah, so she's kind of building that bond. You've got different ones. You've got, you know, Sammy and then Angus, Cloud's character, Dean. Sammy and Dean, and Sammy is Catherine Newton. And they seem a bit more like kind of ditzy, vulnerable. Like, they're younger, they're not really sure. You know what I mean? And they're a bit more forward. And as, like, previous, you know... for Catherine Newton, she's kind of got this airheadedness, but she's got quite a good comedy presence. She's got a quite good comedy, like, might I find.
When she has.
She's got quite good timing, so she kind of seems like she knows not to overdo it or underdo it. She's kind of given a bit of an airheadedness at times, but she's kind of, like, having fun with it. She's kind of...
Yeah.
She looks like someone who's really enjoying the situation. And that's, like, kind of fun when the character has that. Whereas Angus Cloud, sadly, doesn't really get that opportunity. He never really gets to be, like, a funny character. He kind of just comes across as more the annoying character, and therefore, as a member of the audience, you kind of are just like... You just sound like you're just there just to piss everyone off, so you're just kind of pissing me off, so I'm waiting for you to die, mate.
It kind of felt more like he... Like, the rest of the characters felt a lot more fleshed out, whereas his character felt very much like... They bring him in for, like, an interview, and they're like, oh yeah, your character's gonna die first, and they're like, what's my character's name? I'm Dean, you know?
Yeah.
Like, thinking on the spot.
The old rat pack.
Yeah, the old rat pack. You're dead, mate, you know? So they, yeah, it just kind of felt a little bit like...
I mean, and this is the thing, you know, what is it? William Catlett, who is Rickles. Now, he actually has a much, like, when I was watching, I was like, oh yeah, this dude seems like a, you know, that, like, that good guy role that I could see him and Joey or Melissa Barrera, those two together. Yeah. I could see them making it to the finale, and I could see, you know, they do kind of have that little build up, and they have those few conversations that kind of make you think, he might be the hidden dark horse.
Yeah.
He's going to be the one that pops, you know, he's going to be the badass hero. And then they fucking kill him.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that was one that actually I was like, oh shit.
It caught me off guard.
I was like, that was a good twist.
Yeah,
it's because they literally play it right after that moment of, like, you look out for my back, I'm going to look out for your back. Yeah. I don't trust these.
We're both like ex-military. I know.
And because he seems like quite a strong character, you are kind of like, yeah, I can see this dude kicking some ass.
He could
take down Stevens. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I can see him doing that. So then, literally a second later, when he's like stood there, and you're like, well, shit, what's happened?
Yeah, what the fuck, man.
Which is cool because it's a cool reveal because you are like, your brain is. I think whenever you have this in a horror film, your brain kind of goes into overdrive, which can be a bad thing because part of me was kind of wondering whether his face was going to be like ripped off. I don't know why, but my head went for face rip. I don't know why, but he does have a really cool, it's a real cool practical effect, I think, that they've done there where they've got part of his cheek and part of his throat torn.
Yeah.
Like a real quick, like, rip away.
Quick rip, yeah.
Because we know that Abigail is not far away. They know she's just like in the room across because they're not far away from her, I think, in that scene.
No, they're literally outside her room.
Yeah. And that's why it's so easy for it to be like a sudden, like, oh, like, because she literally looks away for like a moment and it's back, which is cool because it also shows just how quick Abigail is.
Yeah.
Like, the speed around. Why, once you see her moving later on, it's like fucking flying, jumping, like fucking parkour.
Oh, man. There is like a bit of comedy that I did really like is we spoke about how good Kevin Durand is in our spoiler-free one and about how good the whole cast are.
Yeah.
But there's a great bit where, you know, they split up and they're trying to find her and he's like, she's chasing Kevin Durand. It's after he's got like the splinter in his finger, you know, and you have that really good shot of her sneaking up on him. And then he's running and he like radios saying, oh, I've got her trapped in the thing. And then she just bursts through the door straight away, like Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, he closes the door because that locks it.
And then
even, like, it's just all that. There is just so in Kevin Durant's performance of playing that kind of... yes, he's playing dumb, but he's doing it in a kind of quite, like, sweet-natured way.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, the way he's doing it, but it's also so funny, like, literally... One, it's the way that they do it, the way that she bursts, it's not just like the door comes down, it's literally like a splintered bang through the door. And the way she walks in like she's a little ballerina, it's just like, that was fucking nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? So you're there. And it does later make you question some of the other scenes when you're like, why do you think this is going to contain her? But,
I think that's the point. I think the idea is
the playing with it.
She's always playing with it.
It's more, you know? I mean, it's more the other characters, you start to be a little bit like, how are you, why are you still believing her?
Yeah, I don't know.
But also funny in that scene is the fact that the second he runs, he grabs the coat hanger.
Yeah.
And he throws that. Like,
yeah.
She just literally went for a doorman.
Yeah,
she,
it's so good.
Really funny.
But going back to, you know, we get Angus Cloud's death, and then we get William Catlett's death. And they're both, there's only maybe 5-10 minutes between them.
Yeah.
You know, Dean dies, and then they talk about this Valdez character who beheaded people. And then you know, they try to ask who the dad is, and, you know, we find they have that scene where, you know, William Catlett's like, we're both Marines, me and you, Melissa Barrera, we're going to stick together. He dies. Mm. And then...
They also established the fact that the house is now locked down. So they have been locked inside, because that is Rickles, who is then like going to the door, because you have, again, that quite funny scene of Durand thinking he can just leg it into this metal door and it's just going to work.
Yeah.
He's kind of somewhat to establish, like, he's... The thing with this character, I think, with the Rickles character, is he is the one that it makes the most logical sense.
Yeah.
He clearly has... He's literally like, we should just go.
We should just leave.
Let's just go. And he makes that point several times. He realises... The only thing that stops him the first time is because he realises there's a problem to it. But the second it turns into, this is vampire... You know, this is whatever this is kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, they don't know... vampire at this point.
Well, he's dead by the time they figure out.
Yeah, they don't know a vampire, but the second he knows that there's some people is killing people, like an animal, then he's like, well then, this is fucking done. Let's just go.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time, he is this character who is in a lot of films. He is that character who is alongside the female protagonist, and he is almost the one to side-by-side help her, sometimes overshadows that female, I think, in a little way. And he's the one that makes logical sense. And I think, funnily enough, what actually makes this film work and actually kind of a bit more fun later on is the fact that although lots of them are smart and clever in their own way, I'd say who we are left with, none of them make logical sense. They don't really think things through. They just do things. And he's the one that would have stopped a lot of this. And gone like, are you fucking stupid? So as much as I actually think he's really good in the few scenes he is, once... Dean and Rickles are gone, we are kind of left with the fun ones.
Yeah,
the logic is, you've killed off your first kind of the dumbest one, who wasn't going to help in it. He's not literally the dumbest one, but he's the one that just doesn't really work. And then you've killed off your one who would have actually probably
pulled
helped
people
you
together
and probably would have sorted all of this out. So you've got rid of that kind of thing. And now you're left with the ones that are constantly going to be fighting with each other, constantly making the wrong move and constantly doing it. And somehow it makes it work better than if it's not like people in standard horror films, you know, when you're like, oh, you're making the wrong super choice. And it's not that there's not a couple of choices in here that are like, I don't know why you're still doing that.
Yeah.
But the way they establish the character kind of makes it so that they keep like doing things and they keep thinking, well, this isn't working, so we've got to try this and this isn't working. And they start questioning themselves and going over each other, and they're never really on the same wavelength at any point. None of them kind of work, and even when they start to get friendly and like with some of them, with Kevin Durant and Catherine Newton's character, where they get a little more friendly. But the problem is they're just never really there, and he's not really on the page to notice what's going on. And you know, so it really helps the film that you've actually established that these people are not a team. They are not working as a team, and they don't know what's going on. And they are making shitty choices because they are so thrown off. Because the beginning, like we said, establishes a grounded nature, and now they all have just thrown off because they're actually, you feel a bit more like you get it, that they are literally in this, like, what the fuck, vampires?
Surreal situation.
Like, what is happening?
And that's what I mean, that's kind of what I was working to. You have...
Before you rudely cut it, ruined
my train of thought. You get the first two deaths. And then you very much sink into thinking like, okay, this is gonna be, we get a death every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how it's gonna play out. You know, one by one, the characters are gonna wander off and investigate a noise and die, and then somebody else goes to look for something and then they die. But actually, once you kind of whittle it down to the kind of main four characters, you probably have like the whole second act basically leading into pretty much the very end of the or the very kind of middle of the third act, you get these characters trying to function, but they can't really function as a team because, you know, Dan Stevens, Frank, is just like, sometimes he's absolutely terrifying, and then sometimes you think that he's like, I don't know, he's just like a hilarious character. Yeah. And then Melissa Barrera is clashing with him, and people are torn between like trying to work together, trying to pick sides almost.
Yeah.
And you get this dynamic where they're like, okay, we're going to go and kill her. And then Melissa Barrera's like, I know that's not going to work, I'm not going with you. And we get a great scene where, you know, she's doing ballet to Swan Lake, and then and she's dancing with Dean's corpse, and she fucking batters them. They go downstairs and they're like, I told you it wasn't going to work. We've got this, we need to try and do, you know. And that's when I think we get the scene where they're like, well, what do we do with vampires?
Yeah.
And it's as I was saying, once you kind of, a lot, the first act is grounded, like you said. And then as you get into, and you have a bits of comedy that kind of don't massively work because it's very straight-laced comedy almost, you know. But then once it goes into, like, the surreal happens, once we realise it's a vampire, that's when the surrealist comedy starts. And that's when, like, you have this mental situation and they're like, what can we do, you know, what can we do about it? And then, you know, like the bit where they're talking about what works against a vampire, and then they say garlic. And Catherine Newman comes back with onions.
Yeah.
And, like, you expect it to be, like, that's, like, a funny moment.
That one almost shouldn't be as funny as it was.
It shouldn't be as funny.
It shouldn't work, but in the moment. In the moment. Characters.
And the way Dan Stevens sold it so well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, those are fucking onions, you know? It's, like, there's something about, like, it's so surreal. And but everybody's playing it very straight-laced. That's why it works.
Yeah, you know, that's what I mean. You believe it. This is the plus side of the fact that, you know, for what might, you know, that first half an hour, for people that are expecting that standard, just, you know, one by one, hunted down, vampires coming after them, they're stuck in
yeah.
You know, if that's what you're kind of expecting, then that half an hour might, for some people, feel a bit of a drag.
Yeah.
I thought this is, you know, they're actually establishing what those kind of films don't tend to do, is they're actually establishing these characters. So when they do moments like that, it works because you know that that's exactly what Catherine Newton's character is.
Yeah.
She is, and they've already explained what she is, you know the basics, you know that she is a...
She's from money.
She's doing this basically for fun.
She's doing it for
That's fun. Why she's having fun doing this. But, you know, she's not dumb, but she is, like, in terms of the real world dumb. Like, she's that, you know, the same way that, you know, the same way Peter, which is Kevin Durant, same way that he's, you know, he's literally dumb, as in, like, mentally, like, in some way capacitated, like they say. But again, like you said before about the switching, like, the second he's told to do the job, like, the way his persona changes, when he's told to go in, basically off Abigail, you just see the persona just completely change. He goes from this kind of look to
I'm fucking
good. And he's going, he's like bull in a china shop, kind of like he's just going for it kind of thing. He is gone, like, in the facial expressions. That's why I thought he was so good, because you were like, there are parts of that when you go, you'd think maybe if he was selling it like the dumb thing the whole time, you'd be like, I never believed that you're like a killer, you know, a muscle killer. But the second he changes, you're like, oh shit, like, actually I can see this, and you can see the complexity, and you can, and with all the characters, they've got that extra kind of, you can see why they're smart and you can see why they're dumb, but not in like a dumb kind of way. It's just like, you can see the flaw of the character, and that's what makes their choice dumb. You know, for most of the thing. And I guess Melissa Barrera's Sammy is the main one that's not, like, so much like that.
Yeah.
She doesn't get as many of those quirky moments, which, you know, in some ways works. And, you know, and she's doing a good job, but it is sadly still what, well, for most people, will not make her the favourite character in this film.
No, I think she's very much like the straight character.
Yeah.
You know, she is a lot more serious. She doesn't really get many kind of, you know, she
that scene you said before, though, was a good, you know, when she sends them off and then when they come back.
Oh,
there is a humorous side to the kind of
she's
how
already
pleased with herself she is. The fact that they're just like, Dan Stevens has got a goddamn stake for his leg, and he's just like, for fuck's sake.
Fucking yanked out.
She just seems to be enjoying that moment of just how much, you know, Dan Stevens is a bit of a dick. But yeah, a fun dick.
And like I said, like, it's compared to, you know, compared to Scream, when she was, I don't know whether it's because I wasn't, particularly in Scream 5, I wasn't a massive fan of her character, Sam Carpenter. I didn't particularly like the backstory to her, and it felt like she didn't. It didn't feel like she had as much to work with, and obviously coming in, and she's worked with, like, you know, she was working with Jenna Ortega, who was obviously kind of, or still is seen as being a very, like, you know, hot market in horror.
So hot right now.
So hot right now. And, you know, a lot of people kind of gravitate towards her. So she was kind of sharing the limelight with her. And then also trying to follow
a character, to be fair, that is not meant to be. She's meant to be a damaged character.
She's meant to be a damaged character. So,
you know, and the problem with a damaged character is damaged character doesn't get to be that much fun.
No.
And I think her sister was the one that was meant to be a bit more kind of free of it all and wasn't so, like, broken down. So it doesn't give an actor a lot to kind of do, does it?
No. But then she was also, you know, following in the footsteps of Neve Campbell, you know, which would have been hard to do. And so, and she, you know, sharing the limelight with Jenna, whereas in this, she still plays a damaged character. You know, she's supposed to be like a medic who was in the army and then, you know, became addicted to, you know, opiates and got kicked out and is trying to get back to her kid. So she's a damaged character. However, in this, it very much felt like, maybe because she had centre stage more, and it wasn't like,
she got to be a main character. I think Sam Carpenter in the Scream film is still sharing. You are just sharing with her, for, like, you know, they did put the original character in the background, in obviously in Scream 5 and even in Scream 6 and stuff like that. But she still has the other actors to kind of have to compete with, and you know, and
Jenna and, you know, Sam and, I can't remember,
Mason Good, you know, those kind of ones. They were all quite strong.
But even the main, you know, the two main protagonists of the new Scream films are those sisters.
Yeah.
You know? So you've automatically
changed that for the second one.
Yeah. They're automatically sharing. But in terms of this, it felt like she did a great performance. I didn't realise she was in it until that opening scene.
Alright.
Yeah, alright. And then I just think everybody fucking brought their A game. I think Giancarlo kind of did that. You know, I think he is great as, like, a very calculating character, but he has pretty much been typecast in that way.
Yeah.
But he's a brilliant actor, but in this, I think, like, when he was brought in, he was slightly sinister, and you knew you were going to see him again. And then when we see him and he's just in a fucking room and he's got, like, fake teeth on. And
the scene just, for me, felt out of place.
It felt,
Like some parts of that scene, but mainly the whole concept with him just felt so out of place.
I
didn't feel that he felt like, one thing, to kind of, for that kind of, because obviously that is later on, but just to reference that scene to Alicia Weir's Abigail.
Yeah.
The thing is that what Alicia Weir does so well is that she balances the kind of the goofy kind of almost slightly kind of self-awareness of certain parts with the fact that she's having fun, but she's actually creepy.
Yeah.
She's actually quite scary. And therefore, having the teeth and the eyes, because it does look different once you actually change it. You do have a moment.
Does.
I felt like I had a moment where I had to adjust to her looking the way she did. But once she kind of goes for it, not only is she kind of really looks like she's having fun, and, you know, and it's a girl who is acting like a girl, but technically is very old. And she completely sells that idea that she is knowledgeable and understanding. And that's what I mean. She has that balance of, like, I'm having a fun time, but I'm also really creepy. And the problem is, when that's what you're setting for the example, and the child is the one setting this example, you know, that you're in this form, but when you're that, you're a little bit more... She felt like a serious monster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She was having fun as the monster, but she felt seriously actually terrifying to me. I thought she was actually quite scary. And which is why when you get the scene with...
Giancarlo.
When you get the scene with him, it just feels like he's not really buying it himself. To me, I just got this throwaway feeling like he's not really like into this.
Yeah.
He's not really fully invested. He's not even trying to be scary, because he has to do a lot. Another thing that hurts it is the fact that he has to do with those teeth a lot of speaking,
yeah.
A bit of exposition. But I kind of wish they'd not given him the teeth. He changed into that after he did the exposition, because sadly, just when he's got to do a lot of talking in that form. Because even when Abigail's doing it, she kind of goes back. When she has to do a lot of her talky scenes,
she goes back to the ghost.
So doing it with those teeth kind of, it somewhat ruins it. It just takes you out of that moment, because it suddenly felt a little bit goofy.
Yeah.
And his teeth looked goofier than the rest as well. Like, I'll be honest, I don't know why. It didn't look like they were fitting properly. Or it looked like his like stood out more. Like, I don't know, like the other ones had like more, like ones that probably were more of a pain in the ass because they were more like deeper in there, whereas his were more like, he was more like, I'm just going to put a top veneer layer on. I'm not doing deeper than that. I'm only in this for like two scenes.
I felt that noise. You're like fucking for 6 hours. I don't know. I just feel like
dude's got like presence, but it just wasn't there.
I feel like a lot of film balanced horror and comedy really well. Like there's a scene where they split up and they're looking for Abigail.
Yeah.
And you get Catherine Newton ends up getting chased. She sees that little box, which she thinks is a coffin, which was a really cool moment. And it's quite suspenseful. And then she runs and she ends up falling into the swimming pool.
Yeah.
And the swimming pool is like, the swimming pool's fucking
hundreds
bothering.
Of dead bodies.
There's so many dead bodies, all like bloated and decomposing.
And what also helps is it's not just a pool of water. It's like a slimy layer, like where people are decomposing.
Yeah,
and
all
that's
the
what,
fats
like,
mixed
yeah.
in. It's so fucking, like that bit was gross and terrifying. And then you, at the same time, you had Kevin Durand where he gets the splinter, you know?
Yeah.
And you have like a bit of comedy there. And then they kind of, you know, they meet up. And then even then when Catherine Newton gets bitten and you have the scene where like her and Kevin Durand are looking for Abigail and they're talking, you know, she's like, Kevin Durand saying, you know, we're friends, like there's people out there who love us both, we're going to get there. And then she turns. And the whole time they're playing with, is she going to turn, is she isn't?
Yeah.
What's true about vampires, what isn't? And then when she finally turns and she kills Kevin Durand, that's pretty gross. And it's great because they show the bite and they show her feeding a little bit. But then a lot of it is just like shots of the statues as he's screaming. And then she does like the weird kind of dance as she's being possessed.
Yeah.
And then she calls for, Dan Stevens and Melissa Barrera. And we get like, you know, we get like a bit of like a creepy scene where we're like, are they going to take the bait? You know, what's going to happen? And then she chases them. And that's when we get the throwback to Ready or Not with the, you know, when they hold up the reflect the light and she just fucking explodes.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But it's also that bit of like a bit of horror. And then like, fuck, that was really funny. And
yeah,
it came
yeah.
out of nowhere, you know?
Well, because it's referenced earlier. Because we have the whole before that is the Abigail when they get caught in the cage.
Yes.
Now something that's really fun and I think opens up this film is the fact that they obviously establish the fact that Abigail is just playing with her food and she's having fun playing with them, which is really helps with that, because one thing that always pops into your head in these kind of films is, you know, I mean, they do the early established where he's like, I'm going to take away your mobiles and things like that.
Oh,
they can't really.
Oh,
can't really, you know, but they almost play with that because they're like, oh, it doesn't really matter anyway in this place. And I think that the thing that's really nice about that, you know, that scene when she's, you know, when she's was caged and telling them about like how she was part of it all the time, is it opens up the whole film, you know, to the idea that, yeah, like, she doesn't actually want to kill them. So that's why they're not dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because part of you is thinking, well, she could have just literally slaughtered them like straight away. So,
of course, yeah.
So, and she doesn't want to. And when she's telling them about each of their pasts, and why, you know, which is a really good scene. And yeah, her acting is fantastic in that. She seems like a full grown-up, the way she is literally destroying them with the words that she knows, what she knows about them, the history. You know, it's not a boring scene. It's an intense scene, you know, in the middle of all of this. And again, that balancing of having, like, comedy one moment while you're also having something scary, and then having these, like, intense conversations.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're still buying it and you haven't thought, oh, these characters are too goofy for this to work kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a really hard balance. I mean, that scene's really... really cool, you know. Obviously, it has, you know, her trying to play them against each other and saying,
yeah,
someone's going to open the door, you know, which one I let one of you live. And, you know, she has that really fun way of playing with them in little different ways and making them turn against each other. And then obviously, you have them go off and it's just Dan Stevens and they have that kind of conversation. And again, you're thinking, I mean, one thing that kept popping into my head, and this is the way I think they know exactly what they know their horror. They know that everyone's going to be thinking, oh, this, like, what are you doing? Like, obviously, he's getting close. But he gets, like, right up to the cage.
Yeah.
So I was sat there thinking, like, what the fuck? Like, this is too dumb of a decision. Like, come on, dude. Like, she can grab you and she can fuck with you here. And again, and then the nice part about that is, like, that is something that I was expecting in my head. And I think a lot of horror fans would be there, like, she can just grab you now. She can literally, like, yank your arm off or put your hand in your chest or something.
Yeah.
She's so now strong. But it's also the fact they all stood around that. And again, to further prove that she's just playing with them, she literally just fucking smashes the door off its hinges.
Yeah.
And she's like, I didn't need to be in here. I was just having fun. This was a fun play.
Yeah.
You know, we were all playing, you know, this little scene and this is fun now, you know, and play with that. But also what I really liked and what that dancing scene with Catherine Newton, what I thought was going to happen in that dancing scene, because when Sammy comes down to save Dan Stevens, she opens the light and her hand explodes.
Yes.
That's the first time we get the, oh, so if they go into sunlight, they explode. Or if they die or something like that, part of their body, and I guess that's what happens when sunlight hits their body, it dies. So if their part of their body dies, they explode, and you're like, now that's a proper ready or not. Like, her hand literally explodes and you see it regrowing and she's screwing it. Really cool. And during that Catherine Newton scene, because we had slight sunlight coming through, I kept thinking what was going to happen was basically, I thought that was how her possessing her.
Yeah.
I thought she was doing it and then she was going to kill her.
She's got to
put by literally down, like, bit by bit taking her, and like you were going to see like different parts of her body start to like explode in the sunlight and things like that, which I thought also would have been cool. The way she dies is cool, is like a quick. But I thought it was going to be a bit more body horror at that point to us. And there is a lot of nice. There's a lot of little throwbacks to classic body horror kind of things, like the when Abigail at first attacks them in that room when she does the, you know, the dance with Dean's body, you know, that whole, like, when she grabs the crucifix off his chest and, you know, like, because she's got her legs wrapped around his chest and then she gets the crucifix and she's going into his chest. You know, it's kind of like The Exorcist, like when she stabbed her, you know, and you've got those kind of little, like, when she, like, at one point when she's going after them, when she jumps down the stairs, she kind of does spins, but her head spins at the same time. As, you know, those nice little, like, winks to kind of the demon child kind of thing.
Yeah, all tropes.
That's thrown in there. But, yeah, I really liked that kind of over the top, like, bloodiness. Obviously, you know, Giancarlo gets the same.
Yeah.
When he gets stabbed for
his, that was cool. But, like,
as part of that scene kind of thing. But
yeah, I don't know. It just felt like once it got to the end and Giancarlo came back in and he's like, oh, she turned me and I've just been in here for, like, you know, for 2 years. I've just been helping her get her enemies in here. But no more, you know, I'm going to turn you and you...
I'm going to take it all over.
I'm going to take it all over. You know. Dad's on the way.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just felt like they wanted to do a kind of some subversion and they wanted to have this thing where, like, you know, Melissa Barrera has built up a relationship with Abigail. But I just feel like Dan Stevens going... yeah, fuck it, I'll become a vampire. And then killing Giancarlo. And then draining Abigail. And then just, like, battering Melissa Barrera and saying, I'm going to make you kill your kid.
Mm.
And then She comes back, and then they have a fight. I don't know, it just felt really like...
Yeah, I definitely had mixed feelings from about that point in the film a little bit, because...
It felt to me...
It felt very... I don't know what... It felt very 2000s
yes.
Underworld, or you know, those kind of films like...
Face Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, or Blade. Like Blade, actually, thinking of it. You know, we have to suddenly have like a bad guy for them to kind of turn against. And
yeah.
It felt like Dan Stevens suddenly became... I know he'd been like an asshole back and forth in the film, but at this point he was kind of not your standard kind of other guy that kind of survives with her.
Yeah.
Thing, you know, you're probably thinking he's probably going to die, but at the same time, even if he'd survived, I would have been a bit like, yeah, but you know, he survived, you know, he made it through, and he's not the typical dude that gets to the end kind of thing. That would have worked as well, but... The fact that they turned him into that, I don't know why, it just gave me proper, like, you know, I think it's in, like, the first Blade movie with Wesley Snipes, and it has, what's his name? Oh, I can't remember what the actor's name is, but anyway, Stephen Dorff.
Yeah.
And he becomes, like, he's meant to be, like, the uber vampire, and then they have to have this big vampire fight at the end. And
yeah.
It felt a little bit like that, and it's not that I didn't like Dan Stevens as, you know, a vampire, you know. Didn't mind Dan Stevens. I was getting a bit of a kind of the charming Jerry Dandridge kind of like a little bit of a I'm a fucking badass kind of thing. It just didn't. I don't know. It didn't feel like the way the film was slightly going to go. And it's not that it was terrible. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't like it didn't like ruin the experience.
No,
of the film.
It didn't ruin it. It just.
But the Giancarlo scene I think was way off. And then what I did like the changing scene. It's blood again, but I liked the fact that basically it was like as if your body has to get rid of the actual blood.
All of the blood
is going to be replaced by whatever is forming, whatever blood or whatever is forming inside, like whatever's taking over in their body.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like they basically, and I think this is kind of becoming like a very radio silence kind of like nowadays thing that they do in these horror movies. They basically, they're like, okay, we need a shot of our final girl covered in blood.
Yeah.
And that's how the film has to end. That shot, you know? All right, how do we do it? Well, we can't show them killing Abigail because she's a child. We can't show a child being killed in a film. All right, so we need somebody else to get killed. Well, Dan Stevens, why don't we just make him be the bad guy? You know?
She was already covered in blood from Joan Collins.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt very cheap, and it felt very much like, I don't know why Dan Stevens all of a sudden was like, oh yeah, fuck it, you know? But this whole film thing, I've spent wanting
to... I mean, he was sold
support.
As a, and it felt like he had been part of the, he had actually been in the fold originally.
Yeah.
Part of this kind of, you know, kind of in that. And somewhat, I that's the part, I didn't completely disbelieve it, because I was like, at this point, he seemed very much like he didn't think he was necessarily getting out of this situation. So I think he thought, well, fuck it. If this means I'm gonna fucking rule and I can do this.
Maybe.
It just felt like very much like the asshole character being like, now I can take this special serum and I'll become the fucking bad guy.
I'm the main bad guy.
Yeah,
I'm the most powerful for the next 10 minutes until you kill me.
It was, it was a little bit 2000 superhero movie where it had to be like, he's been a pain in my ass the whole film, and now suddenly he's going to be the main problem I have to solve at the end of the film. And it had that light of that, and the words I used in my spoiler free. Then after that, Melissa Barrera is just getting fucking thrown from, like, kicked into a different piece, you know, piece by piece by piece by piece. And the more you're doing it, the more you're starting to be like, I mean, you did somewhat establish that. Somewhat, there's a grounded, somewhat nature here that these people die. But I feel like this girl should have died a long time ago, because she's thrown for like metal barring.
She's
thrown for a table. She's stabbed through. I quite like the stabbing through when he pulls her back through again.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was brutal. It has some good brutal parts to it, and I somewhat liked the whole like Abigail kind of them kind of fighting again. But it just didn't feel like Abigail needed to have this kind of villain that she needed to help take down. You know, Abigail felt like the villain.
Yeah.
And it felt like they needed to absolve the child that she's actually, you know, because she's been killing them for a good reason. She's killing people that are doing bad things, technically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, she's killing them because her dad doesn't love her. And
which is funny, you know, and I feel like I get that, but to be honest, then, if that's the case, then don't. It felt like the whole film you've been setting up who that could be, her dad. When they go to escape, who's at the door but Daddy?
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, you could have had this scene of a quick fight, whatever, you know, with that whole part.
You could have had the superhero ending, but
to be honest, you didn't really need the Giancarlo part. I think you need, you could have literally just had the Dracula part. Even if you still wanted to change Dan Stevens just to blow him up at the end, you still could have done that by just having, like, for whatever reason, Dracula somewhat changes it, you know, that kind of, just so that they can kill him kind of thing, or whatever they want to do. Or have him get bit like Catherine Newton's character so that, you know, that happens. I feel like the Giancarlo thing didn't need to be in the film at all. I feel like his character should have just been completely removed. And, you know, it adds some tension at the beginning because he's like, well, he must be in on it. He must have someone else in it. So it adds some of the tension in it on. But if anything, then he just shouldn't have reappeared. He should have been one scene and done. Or just not get it, you know, just to say that this actor's in the film. And that obviously leads, you know, as I said, I think they're doing very well for what they're doing. And, you know, I'd quite happily see the Abigail character again in a different kind of setting and film, but it's, I don't want to see it in terms of daddy-daughter. And that's goes to the final twist or the final character that appears that we were told was going to appear. And I was wondering who's going to appear, and I was wondering, oh, who have they decided to bring up as cast as that? Because it felt like one of those bits in the film when it's like, in my head, I was literally there like, here's going to be Johnny Depp or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to show up at the door as Daddy Dear, you know?
Yeah.
Or are they not going to? And part of me in my head somewhat actually wanted them to not show him at all.
Yeah.
Because I felt like this is her film and we don't need Daddy showing up.
Yes.
And I think this film would have been better if Daddy didn't show up because it's Matthew, I can't remember what his last name is. I bet he's not on the thing because it's more of
Matthew Good.
Perfectly good actor, done lots of good films and stuff like that. But my main problem here is, one, because you're just kind of looking at this actor for a couple of minutes that he appears and you're kind of looking at it. And they could have cast anyone as that, you know, they could have got goddamn Brad Pitt to walk in the room at this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some kind of thing and be like, oh, you're only going to be in it for 3 minutes. Can you do this cameo? And it does seem like that kind of want. And I know Matthew Good isn't a big, big actor in that way. So they haven't gone for like a flashy cameo.
Yeah.
They've gone for like the British accents to be more of a, I feel like they were trying to go for more of a classic British kind of Dracula-ish kind of act.
Yeah.
To be that.
Gary Oldman. Imagine if he'd have walked in.
Gary Oldman walking in. There you go.
Just fuck it.
They might as well as a thing. And it could have been, you know, literally anyone. And to be honest, earlier in the film, I kind of wondered whether it was bloody Giancarlo who was going to show up. Because it didn't necessarily need to be a, you know, it doesn't have to be just because Abigail is white. Because it's not, we don't even know how he's her daughter. It's just because he changed her. She might not have even, you know, had any reproductive in that way. So, but yeah, I gotta be honest, Matthew Good's performance as it just felt out of place completely.
Yeah, it felt a bit weird, didn't it?
He looked a bit odd to me. He looked a bit off. Again, the teeth and the eyes and it didn't look quite. And the way that he was like uber pale, when I feel like Abigail actually did, like,
she didn't look pale.
She didn't look like mega, like in stupidly.
Not as pale as him.
Like, he looks, you know, a bit Edward Cullen-y kind of pale. Yeah. You know what I mean? A bit weird in his paleness.
Yeah.
And he just looked out of place. I didn't even like the way that they dressed him. I just felt like the way they dressed, he just looked odd.
Yeah.
Didn't look classic. I would have rather they went full on classic if they're going to go around or a modernized way, but, you know, make him look like he is the mob boss, but make him look Dracula. But what he was wearing looked off in it.
It was just like a bit of
like
slightly
a cream colour. Like, it was like a cream colour, and then he has pale skin, but he had like a blackish top, I think.
It was like a greyish suit or something.
Was it greyish? It felt. It felt like he was so washed out. Everything was so washed out.
It was fit like kind of like the suit you'd see them wear, like Chandler Bing wear, Friends. It was like a slightly too big suit.
It did. It was so oddly 90s about it, like when no 90s. One had a correct fit. And here, my main gripe here is, like I said before, Alyssa Weir, I think, is both. You can see she's playing with her, but you can see she is also can be terrifying.
Yeah.
And she can be scary. And she is scary when she's trying to be scary. And she's playful when she's playful. And if you're going to have this scene, Dracula should walk in and be fucking terrified.
He should. He shouldn't be going like... He shouldn't lick her hand and then be like, you should go.
Yeah.
It's close to dinner time.
Yeah. Like, he shouldn't be this like... Goofy joke. He feels corny.
Yeah.
He felt like a corny Dracula walking in with the extras. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
With that accent, walking in and kind of strutting around like he's that. And you know, I almost feel like I can't... You can't put it down necessarily to the actor, because that's what he's been told to do. He's only an actor who's coming in for a few scenes, so he's only doing exactly what the director's basically going. Because they can't really hire someone for, like, basically what is a 3 minutes of a scene and go like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, I want you to really go deep with this. Because I'm here for, like, here for like a day, guys.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just here to do this, you know what I mean? I'm not going... You know, so nice and all, you know, to, you know, I'm glad they didn't go for like a full on, like, bigger major, like, in my head, I don't know why I kept thinking Johnny Depp. I kept thinking Johnny Depp was going to walk in like, yep, I'm daddy.
My daddy's home.
But if you're going to go for it, then go for someone that's fucking terrifying. You know what I mean? Go for someone that's truly, like, scary when they walk in, you know?
If he hadn't have died, it would have been class if it was Christopher Lee. You know,
yeah.
It feels like it should have been somebody like kind of classic.
Yeah, you needed a classic gravitas, because that's the other thing. It didn't need to be someone who's like somewhat young. Like, they've gone with someone who literally could be Abigail's dad within age.
Yeah,
and it kind of feels like, yeah, but he's Dracula. He could be any age. He could be whatever we need him to be.
Yeah, he's an old man.
But you just needed. I feel like, yeah, you needed someone to be like that. Like. And that's what also throws people's questions up, because they, again, like this whole like universe or whatever, is it a universe, is it not? And like, this feels, again, like it's just a one-off, you know?
There's lots of different stories that are monster movies.
But, you know, at the same time, this could have been a chance to introduce like a proper Dracula to then do a Dracula film with an actual Dracula, but I don't want this Dracula film.
No.
I don't want that Dracula, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but yeah, it did feel out of place. Kind of just like, yeah, the tail end of that third act, just kind of, it just felt like they didn't get the balance right there at the end. Like, they felt like they had to suddenly make an action movie at the
That's
end.
It, yeah.
When the end should have been a full-on horror, or a full-on a bit more of a shock, or a, you know, you think these guys are getting out of here, but actually they're not. You know, and that would have been a perfectly acceptable idea in my head, and it still would have worked with the tone of the film, for it to not quite have the happy ending kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and it also kind of takes away when it seemed a bit too obvious that Sammy was going to be get out of here kind of thing. When Joey, Melissa Burrow's Joey was going to get, you know, it felt like it was quite obvious. And yeah, they do have the scene where she rings her son and she's thinking that this is it, I'm done. But because it's Dan Stevens' one, you know that dude's going to get his comeuppance, because that's kind of, they've made him into this uber villain kind of thing.
Yeah,
Dan Stevens still sells it.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it still
he fucks.
Works, you know, and you know, it's there. And if they'd suddenly turned around and been like, actually, Dan Stevens is Dracula, he's daddy, then yeah, I could have sold that.
Yeah, you could have sold me that, man.
But yeah, it just didn't quite stick the landing. But so much of it worked, and the fact that this film both had scenes where I was like, yeah, I think she's terrifying, and I'm laughing.
Yeah.
It's a good film with, like, and I...
Yeah, it's just... Coffee boy.
I'm back to coughing.
Yeah, you're back to coughing. Have a sip.
Sorry, we missed that in the last episode. It's because, basically, all those people out there thinking, ah, last episode, you were literally coughing in my ear, which for some people was probably the worst thing ever for their last one.
And
which
some is fine. Was rather erotic.
Yeah, some people, that was their biggest kick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By the way, if this episode does huge, just like the last episode, if they do huge, we'll cough in every single episode now, because that's what we'll do. We'll hunt for those ratings.
Yeah, we know your kink.
I tried to pinch that cough, but it didn't work.
Yeah, you could pinch it off, man. But yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it was done really kind of well, and then that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like a like early 2000s superhero movie. It felt basically like Melissa Barrera's getting battered by Dan Stevens, and then, you know, the Green Goblin comes. She's like, "You came," and he's like, "Of course I did, buddy." You know, and then they beat Sandman together and they beat Venom together. You know, it felt very much like
I mean, luckily, that. Because it was, you know, because this is, I think, a well-made film, luckily it didn't feel as cheesy as that, but in the,
it was in the moment
of watching the film, it doesn't fully come across like that. Like, it feels like a perfectly acceptable way to kind of take this film, but it is, like, I feel like in reflection, the whole, like, concept was a little bit too that. It was a little bit too Spider-Man free.
Yeah, it was a bit, you know, Spider-Man free. A little bit
too, like, this, you know, and that whole, like, yeah, again, right through to the end, it all felt a little bit too much like, oh, we could build a universe here.
Yeah.
We could start making more characters. Abigail can go off and save other creatures. Coming too soon is, you know, Abigail versus the Invisible Man, and then it all begins again, and then Tom Cruise decides to jump back in the ring.
Yeah,
and Tom Cruise goes, I'm not going to be the mummy this time, don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the creature from the Black
Lagoon. I'm going to be the creature from that.
You know, it's going to be the greatest film ever, and Abigail, I'll fight her, and I'll kill her, and then I'll kill them all, and, you know, and then the universe dies again, because they fucked it up again.
Yeah, because nobody can work with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
We'll probably get attacked by Scientology now. We'll end up dead in ditches.
Come for us.
But it was always going to happen.
It was going to end that way.
Any last kind of thoughts before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, as we said, you know, we got to that tail end of the film, but, you know, for the most part, this is a solid and enjoyable film.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic if we could have gone in more blind than we did.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's a well-made film that doesn't completely, you know, stick that landing, but for the most part, it's really enjoyable. It's a lot of fun to have, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as I said, I just kind of think, in some ways, they almost didn't need to keep going. And they kind of could have... the ending could have been a little bit more simplistic. I know it might come across a bit more like that, but it's such a fun time that it could have just come to a more simple, like,
yeah,
we found a way out kind of way. You know, it worked. The plan, because they had that whole plan about recircuiting the thing to open the doors and, you know, getting to that point. And it was just like, well, that kind of, you know...
Just do that.
It kind of could have worked. And then at the end, they open the door and their heads both get lopped off and it's fucking, oh, you don't see who it is, but it's Dracula. That would have fucking killed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Something like that, like kind of a shock kind of, oh, shit, like, this is it. And then Abigail.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the actors, I thought, were, like, really good. Across the board, all doing their parts for what they were doing, you know. We've talked about the one or two that didn't quite, but... I really enjoyed it, and I think, you know, I think I've enjoyed all of their films that I've seen, that I've actually seen of theirs, you know, of their directors. I think they're definitely a fun kind of voice. I think they know how to make a kind of a fun, like, kind of fast pace. Like, they know how to make a horror film, I think, for the big screen.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
They feel like blockbuster horror makers, not small time horror makers. You know what I mean, and both are good in their own way, but they can definitely make ones that bring together a good cast and kind of, they're the bigger ones that you see happening, you know.
Yeah.
They're kind of in that kind of, I guess, you know, like Jordan Peele is kind of, he's only going to make blockbuster ones, not like tiny ones.
Yeah, and but at the same time, it feels like it does well with its budget. It doesn't feel necessarily bloated, you know. Yeah. You know, if you've watched Abigail, come let us know your thoughts on the film. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at CMTH Podcast. Please remember to hit that subscribe button and please leave us a lovely review. I'm saying this with a cough in my throat as well. It's got to come in a minute. I know it. So we will see you. Take care and goodbye.